The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Many years ago, when the war in Afghanistan began, I became a member of the board of directors of Afghan for Civil Society. It was started here in the city by Pat and Kayum Karzai. And as part of that movement to bring a civil society to Afghanistan, to bring human and social justice to Afghanistan, there was a woman that had worked in Afghanistan from 1971 to 1974, where she taught in the American International School of Kabul. Her name is Ann Hacker. And they built a center in Kabul, an educational center for women and children.
And street workers.
And street workers. And it's just an amazing place. And the group is called Afghan Women's Educational Center. It's building, as they say, equality and opportunity. Anne is in Baltimore for a visit, for an event that's going to take place this Sunday, August 7th at 2 p.m. At St. Mark's Church at 1900 St. Paul Street here in Baltimore to talk about this incredible work she's doing and what's going on in Kabul, and also clearly to raise money to make this thing continue and happen. And Ann Hacker, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So first, tell us a little history. You were in Afghanistan.
I'm what's called an international nomad teacher or educator. I taught in New York for 2 years, and then I've been overseas since then, teaching and then being an educational consultant. So I've lived, and this is your geography lesson, I started in Laos. Then I went for a year to Lashkargah in Afghanistan, which is near Kandahar. Then 3 years in Kabul. From there, I went to the Brazilian jungle, up in the jungle, when they were reclaiming part of the jungle and planting malina trees. Then I went from there. I have to close my eyes to do this. I went to Algeria for 3 years, and I worked for private industry where they set up American curriculum schools following our curriculum, but in a foreign base because there isn't a school available. From Algeria, I went to Venezuela, the interior, and that again was with Bechtel Corporation. I ended up in Brunei helping when they built the Sultan's Palace. And then I said, oh, and there wasn't a job anymore with the construction company. And I ended up in Europe, and I was just going to then work my way back to the States. And I ended up working in a military school as a tourist hire. Then I decided I couldn't teach anymore. I wasn't used to the children that I dealt with. And so I went in educational sales and consulting. And I ended up staying in Europe. I've been to Saudi Arabia 17 times as a single woman. I've been to Africa. My last 5 years after working with one publishing company was in Egypt. So, yeah, I'm the nomad.
The nomad education, a nomad teacher.
Right. And I always call myself an Afghan coochie, just traveling around.
Coochie are like the gypsies.
Yeah. Coochies are like gypsies.
The gypsies. So what made you go back to Afghanistan this time? This is you're now back in a war zone.
Right. There was that interlude, but the fondest memories, because I think we all reflect upon our lives as we age. We say, gosh, when was the best time? And for some people, it's high school. For me, it was the coinciding of the years in Afghanistan where my personal, professional experiences were just widened and the people I met. So you could be having drinks in a party with one of the top anthropologists in the world and his wife, or you could be hanging out with the coochies in one of their tents when they were giving you tea and sugar. And that were the memories that sustained me during my time. So when everything happened in 9/11, I still had Afghan friends, and we were talking about how do we help. And it's awareness and making people aware of the country. If there was anything I could say, it would be the traits of the people, the courage, the honesty, the openness, and they just cut to the chase. They either liked you or they didn't. They dealt with you or they didn't. But at the same time, the greatest hospitality in the world. So that brought me back. And when I talked with these friends, we kept saying, oh, we're going to build trees. We're going to do this. All the trees were cut down. And it turned out I needed to get a speaker for a conference, and I called my Afghan friend who was in Kabul starting a business. And he got me in touch with this woman who I'd never met, and getting a visa for an Afghan woman to go to a Middle Eastern country was hell.
This was after 9/11.
Yeah, this was, I want to say, 2004, maybe, 2004. So this woman who came, whose name was Shinkai, and she was the director of the Afghan Women's Educational Center. She spoke at a conference. And as good teachers, we always say to our special guests, we'd like you to open the conference. Well, Shinkai is a very strong woman. She opened it and spoke for 20 minutes.
Mm.
And she just said, don't forget me and don't forget the women and children of my country. And she challenged the educators there and all of us to remember that. And so I, of course, go, oh, well, I'd like to support a young girl. And she said, well, if I find someone, you come and you meet her. And that brought me back, and then I saw the work they did, and then I couldn't stop going. And I didn't have a reality check on me, and I didn't know about 501c3s. I mean, I'm just a teacher that you can do anything, you know, if you've got strong will. So I said, oh, well, this work is so great. And so I'm sitting talking to my Afghan friend in Kabul. I go, Iqbal, we have to take this, and we have to fix it. I'll go get money, and we'll fix it. And he looked at me, and he said, Miss Anna, you're crazy. He said, if you fix it, so the landlord takes it and charges more money and they're out anyway. Go get some land and build it. Well, that was the beginning of the road. It seems at times like a never-ending road, but we now, and someone in Chicago that I know from Tucson where I have a home, he gave us the plans for a center. I've approached the ex-king's family for land. We couldn't get that. And eventually, my friend who had come in and I had met as the director of this Afghan Women's Educational Center has been elected to parliament as a woman. And so somehow I was...
The woman who started Afghan Women's Education Center?
Well, she didn't start it. Her sister did back with the refugees in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
In Pakistan, and they had started a center and schools and helping the widows. Basically, it's for widows and street working children.
What do you mean by street working children?
Okay, that would be a child who has to be the economic substance of helping his family because maybe his dad's dead or the male member is handicapped, mom has been traumatized. So that child has to work in the streets or the market, both male and female. The girls tend to work with inside the home, house cleaning or helping or rug making, doing something. The boys will be in the market. They'll also sell phone cards. They might be begging on the street, and they usually contribute less than a dollar a day to their families. And that means they're not going to a school. And if you do go to government school, even if books are provided, you have to have a bit of a uniform. You need your book bag, et cetera, and they can't afford that. So this center is a year-round facility working with children from any age up to 18. They go in and cover the government curriculum from grades 1 to 4. Using government books, but they could come in. We hope they get food. We get donations from various places, and they have qualified teachers teaching them. And then the hope is they transition into a government school and continue. And so we have, you know, true cases of happening, but they are learning to read and write.
And these are kids that... their mothers are not necessarily with them, or they are with them?
They're not living at the center. They're just coming to the center for a 2.5-hour block of time. And most people are
When they're not working in the street.
Right. And most people are unaware. Even in Afghanistan, we talk about the educational statistics. The government schools only operate 2.5-hour sections, 3 sections a day, because there are lack of teachers and lack of facilities. Plus, the government school is closed in the winter in Kabul. So they have a 2.5-month block.
Because they can't afford the heat?
The heat and the salaries. So our center is year-round. So the kids are getting more.
You don't close in the winter?
No, we don't close. And also the class size in the centers is no more than 25, 30. In your government schools, it could be up to 50 and 60. But there is an increase. There's an immense focus on education. And there is private education now.
So now, I mean... But this has become the school you showed me. I mean,
yeah, the center.
The center.
I don't always call it a school. I call it a center.
Well, why do you call it a center? Because it's more than a school.
It's more than a school. It's for the widows. They can come in and have literacy, and we'll have skill training. So when the facility was actually done last September, October, we have what we call the soft opening because we were waiting for a furniture shipment, which is stuck between Pakistan and Afghanistan for nearly a year.
Whoa.
Yeah, with a lot of extra
But that's
fees.
Nothing unusual in Afghanistan these days.
Well, it's part of the Pakistani politics, too. I mean, I don't know. They just won't release these containers. Some of the containers had food, they had eggs, et cetera, and they just sat in the port because they wouldn't clear them. The last I heard, it was up to 12 and 20,000 containers were still sitting there. Wow. And ours was one of them. Though we had paid all the fees, and we ended up paying an extra $15,000 for the portage fees for sitting there. It wasn't our fault.
Right.
And also, it's a woman-run NGO. So therefore, all the legalities of a non-governmental organization have to be followed. They have to go to the finance ministry, the economics. So the paperwork always takes longer. And the women themselves don't do it. They do have male counterparts that help. But again, as a non-government organization, there isn't much money for salaries. And people tend to be then hired away by bigger international NGOs.
So tell us about the women who are in this center that
you created. Oh, well, this is the best part because when we had the soft opening, what we started with were the widows or the women who wanted literacy. So when I went there, which
among some in Afghanistan, from all my conversations, is not the most popular thing in the world.
No, but they're the most wonderful ladies. And so I was there for like 4 or 5 weeks in November thinking we'd get the container. I was there in March thinking we'd get the container. I was there in April. And now I came home to Arizona in April. And I was supposed to go back in July, but the container's not there. They're in Ramadan Eid. So I'm saying, as soon as you get it, because I officially want to turn it over. But what we start with is soft opening of a literacy class of women. Some were widows. Some were just poorer women that had a husband but couldn't. So they just wanted to learn to read. So I worked with them. I would go and talk to them and inspire them and chat with them and that you could have the freedom of your mind within these four walls and we had to help each other. And I am probably a networker in many ways. So I was able to get different things for them for Eid, which is after their holy month of fasting and Ramadan. And I would ask them, why are you here? And this is really interesting. Why would you think a woman would say to me, why are you here trying to learn to read and write?
They're asking you this question.
I'm asking them.
Okay. Right.
Through a translator because I'm a non-linguist. Let's put it that way. I speak English. I've been a nomad, but I think through your eyes and your heart.
You don't speak either Afghan language.
No. The Afghans have great proverbs. There is a way from heart to heart. That's the name of my project.
There's a way from heart to heart.
Heart to heart, yes, which I think is a beautiful.
So you ask them why are they here.
Why are you here? Why would you think they'd want to come and
You're
learn to read?
You're asking me now.
Yeah, why would you think their answer would be?
Why are they here? Well, it could be that if they're widows, they're now alone. They have children to have to raise and protect, and they have to have a way of doing it. Literacy is one way to get there. To educate their own children. To free themselves from the burden of their own oppression.
Okay. The number one reason for learning for literacy for these women was to use a cell phone. Now, you talk about the Arab Spring.
Uh-huh.
That phone means they don't need a home phone line. They can communicate with relatives because not all of them are from Kabul. Kabul has become the center because it's more secure than some of the villages. So that's their main method of communicating, and they needed to know their numbers and their alphabet. That was number one reason. Number two was this wonderful widow, and I said to her, why? And she said, I went to the market, and I was going to buy something, and I sort of got confused inside. And when I came out, I came another exit. I didn't know how to get home. I couldn't read the signs. If someone didn't help me, I would have been lost, and I knew I had to learn to read and write. And the third was one mention that you mentioned, which was to help their children with school.
Hmm.
But I mean, I found that real interesting, that the number one reason was that cell phone technology. It's going to change the world, whether their world is going to accept it or not. It is changing the whole world.
Whether their world will accept it or not. You
yes.
have your doubts about what's going to happen?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, we can look at Egypt. We can look at the other places with uprising. We can look at Syria now. The technology has allowed people to know what they're missing. But again, there hasn't been any training of leadership. So we've got these two things in conflicts. We use the word democracy, but is it democracy they need now, or is it transition? But within the Afghan community, remember when I was there, their people weren't covered as much. Women were educated. They were teaching the university in miniskirts.
In the 70s.
Yes.
Right.
And in parts of the 80s. So, yes, I hope it changes, but I still know there are some very repressive males that want to dominate society based on an Islamic principle. And we, around the world, you see that. There's the fundamentalist and there's the open-minded.
So, what do you think most of these women who participate in the center mm-hmm. in Kabul that you work with fit into that paradigm of? Because they're coming to a place where they can be actually free
right,
on some levels.
Right. But they don't have the freedom of the education to do something to advance themselves like the younger generation. One instance was a widow I met. A lovely woman. Because I would say to them, what can you do? What are you going to do after we have the literacy down? And so some of them might say, can any of you remember to sew because you have such beautiful handicrafts? And there was one woman, and I got to interview and work with several of them very closely. One woman's husband had been the pilot, co-pilot of a flight that went down. There was no insurance by the company. She had three children to raise. Her brother-in-law was on the same flight. He was an attendant. They had no insurance. She's living with her father-in-law and no way. So she was learning. She says, beautiful embroidery. So she became one of my people that I contracted with to make things.
Hmm.
Another woman was a widow and wanted to help her children, and she took care of her mother. And a lot of the women had problems with their eyes. So I went out when I was doing some fundraising in the Far East. I bought them magnifying glasses. So they have the will. The only thing we have to be careful of is we can't give everything. There has to be something you give back. So whenever I talked to them, I said, don't thank me, because they all want to kiss me and thank me and all this. And I say, no, you can't thank me. I said, well, my deal with you is if I hand you something with my hand, you take your other hand, and what do you do with it? You help somebody else. So the philosophy I've tried to talk to them about, and the respect for the facility, because it's unique. Where those kids go to school is better than most public government schools now with the building that we made.
How many kids are in your school?
There's only 300, less than 300. But again, it's called a model. A model being that those methods that we're doing with the children and how they can overachieve and how the women is based on the fact that we're modeling things. We were given from the American School of Dubai bulletin boards. I have some pictures that I'll be showing on Sunday with the way the teachers and the kids have put their work up and a whiteboard, things that are sustaining, not things that we're going to break down. Construction, I'm sorry to say, isn't at the best level, but at least we have a facility we're proud of and looks better. And we had no aid from any international organization. All the funds from this were raised through schools, some in the Middle East, that we did community service with. And so government, I had one woman that I met at a fundraiser in New York. Her company matched, I think the largest donation we ever had was $20,000. The rest of it hasn't been the pennies like Greg Mortensen had, but it's been individuals.
Right.
And everything I do, I pay for myself. And then I buy material and I buy stuff there and resell it, and I do an add-on for carrying it back. It's not made in China. I can show you a picture of the shopkeeper. I can show you a picture of the woman that did it. So it's been a journey.
That's amazing. It has been a journey. But I'm curious about a couple of things here.
Yeah, okay.
The women who are mostly widows and who are trying to figure out a way to create a life in the midst of what goes on in Afghanistan. Do they live in the center?
No. This is a freestanding center. They all live in homes. And, you know, one of the people that have mentored and helped me so much are both Pat and Kayum, because, you know,
Pat and Kayum Karzai.
Yes, right. And they've just been so good. And one of the things that my friend Stan Heisler said to me was, well, Anna, how are they going to sustain it?
And Stan, of course, is somebody who was in
Afghanistan, I was.
For 2 years in the early 70s in the Peace Corps, right?
No, he's Fulbright. He's Fulbright.
Fulbright scholar in Afghanistan. Right.
And his wife taught at the school with me. And so we all became great friends. And they're still my friends today. And they've all helped me so much. But he said, how are you going to sustain this? And I thought, well, it's going to be easy. You know, teachers are idealists. Oh, it's going to be easy, Stan, when we're doing this one. It's really hard because we have this center that is a model. But no one will give funds anymore to NGOs in Afghanistan, so we can't pay the salaries.
So what happens? But they stay?
Well, I don't know. They have a little bit. I don't want to call it a slush fund, but they have some funds built up, and I have some funds that have come through that are sitting there. But the salaries, I mean, you still have to have people that you pay. They're not going to work for free. They have families. So we've not gotten that. And I've not been in the network in the U.S. for the fundraising. So mine has just been this one people.
So the center you built, and
yes,
I want to come back to the heart of it. But
okay.
I mean, it's an incredible, I mean, this, it's a compound. It's this
beautiful
building that you all built from nothing over the last 10 years.
Right. And water has been the problem because it's a very salty area. And dust is a problem. We're right. The land that was given to us was given from the Ministry of Education. I forgot to finish where I got the land from because it was suggested to the Minister of Education that he should give us land. So he did, which was like unheard of. So at one point, someone might dispute the fact, but we have a contract and a deed for it that it reverts to the government eventually. That center was built on the plans of someone who observed the culture, and when you see the plans that Charles did, we lack water. Everything had to be, I did locally, and other than the furniture that's coming. I've learned, I can tell you, my best friends are Abdullah, the playground. We did a playground out of recycled tires.
Mm-hmm.
There is Abdullah, the carpenter, who made us the teacher tables, teacher desks, in cabinets. I took a school specialty catalog and showed him.
He made it from that?
Yes. Oh, great. Beautiful, too. And the library, all the stuff for there. And then there's the painter, the two guys who are the painters. So all of my experience has been that. Of course, I've had bad experiences. The workmanship, we had to redo a lot. The painting, the windows, the glass. But right now, it is a center waiting for more things to happen. And so there is a director, and they're all and the NGO employees. My role has been the contributor, the donor.
The center itself, what's remarkable is, I think, the what you're describing, that you're actually teaching there.
Yeah.
What you're I think if I remember right from what I was reading, what you're teaching the children.
Right.
How it's different than they get most places else.
Well, what's different is fact is your lowered student-teacher ratio. Number two, your surroundings. You have whiteboards. You have bulletin boards. You're displaying children's work. Out in the hallway, we have a place for our shoes. There's a stabilization force through the ISAF, the troops forces. They gave us money for carpeting. Let me think what else. And we offer a computer lab and a library, which will be fully stocked. Computers were given to us by the American School of Dubai when they moved. We also will be I was insistent that we didn't just have three sessions of just, you know, learning the curriculum for the government. One session is a supplement, where it's an enrichment. You can come for English, an extra computer, or extra work. And the women, when they come, they have the literacy block, and then there's a training block. But the literacy, the first graduation was in June, and they finished, and now they've brought in a whole new group.
So the kids, you told me you had to, they were together in a coeducational setting, but you had to separate them.
Well, originally in one of the previous ex-centers that I wanted to just revamp, one center had integrated classes of the boys and girls, and another in a more conservative area separated the boys and girls. And since the land that was given to us is across from a mosque, mm-hmm. to keep a more a better image, we separated the classrooms.
So, I mean, when in what you've done here, mm-hmm. one of the things in looking at the Afghan Women's Educational Center.
Mm-hmm. Right. And see, this is for the whole organization. This is a very small part of it. They have projects all over the country. This center and my Afghan friends that have worked so strongly with me that are business people said, you've got to have it named. So I brought you a bookmark that was designed, and one of my fortunate things of happening was I gained a grandson out of this experience from one of the boys I met. And he's now going to university, and he's an artist. So we have I'll give you one, a bookmark. Here it is. That says, and we did this, education ensures peace, and it'll be called Anna's Educational Center. So it'll be one component, and one side is in Farsi, and one side is in English.
English. One of the things, remarkable things about this is that the organization itself, Afghan Women's Educational Center, this is the idea that they are also raising social consciousness,
mm-hmm. about rights,
building for gender equality, mm-hmm. Fighting against violence against women and children, and mm-hmm. And promoting human rights, and that's part of the curriculum.
Yes,
it's not just the straight learning how to read.
Right.
There's a social consciousness element.
That's part of all their program, and they have to, and they want the women and the children to know their rights. And they want to talk. They do classes with how to solve things without violence, peace initiatives, and that's why I stayed and said, "Oh, I've got to do something. I've got to go back and help because of what they were doing, even in these incredibly poor conditions that I first saw. It was what was happening with people, because it isn't always our surroundings. It's what you're doing, your interaction, and I had so many." They had committed social workers. They had committed everyone. And the kids were happy. And when I would come, they'd try to say to me hello, and I'd take pictures. I mean, I've got more pictures of children than you can ever believe. And they'll smile for me because I said, no, you're handsome little guys and pretty little girls. I want a picture of you with a smile. I don't want you to look sad. And so I've been very blessed.
So how do you feel yourself when you're in Kabul?
Yeah. To me, remember where I've lived. I mean, you know, I feel at times more threatened in Tucson, Arizona. And there are more homicides in Tucson, Arizona than Kabul with the general public. Because I have to exclude from those statistics the suicide bomber who's attempting certain things. When I'm there, I don't have a black vehicle that is tinted glass. I don't have a military guard. I travel with a little car that's not exactly the greatest, with a driver that speaks some English. And I also go to certain tradespeople that I've built up a relationship for, because I come back and resell things. So I'll go to see three or four, and they're also protective. And I'll say, I want the best price, make sure it's good lapis. And then they'll send off to a cousin or a brother or, you know, somebody, and they'll bring me stuff. So, and I do not stay. I stay in my friend's house that I used to teach them as children in Kabul.
Oh, really? Back in the 70s?
Yeah.
People knew from then.
Yeah. And so it's been interesting. I have a bathroom. There's someone there to cook and clean for you. So it's not that I'm going into poverty. I'm just privileged. But I'm privileged in the ability to interact with the people and do things. And, you know, people can't believe this either. I've had one teacher has come back 2 years to visit and help from the American School of Dubai. Two teachers from the American School of Doha have come. I was just at a conference in the Far East to try to raise funds. I have a teacher who teaches, an American teacher who teaches in China, wants to come in October. So I guess we want to see.
Are many of your teachers from overseas, or are many teachers in the center Afghan?
Oh, no, those are all Afghan. These are visitors that want to come and see what happened,
right,
and see how they can help.
So the organization really is an organization.
It's for the people,
It's run by Afghans.
Oh, yeah, it's Afghan women run and dominated. And my friend Shinkai, who I met first, who was the director, is on her second term as parliamentarian, as a Pashto woman. And so I do get to ride in a vehicle with the black windows and the guard, but it's not for me, it's for her.
So how is the center received by the larger community, by the employers of the children, by the families of the children, by the families of the women?
I'll give you an example. Where the center is located is like across the hill over, you know, because Kabul's built between hills. And I was going across one day, and I'm all fed up with the fact that they are not cleaning the road, and it's all full of mud pits and everything. And as we were coming out, and this was in March, this guy stopped our car, and he had a little kiosk, a little shop. And he said, "I want to talk to you." And I said, "How do I get my girls in there?" I said, "You just go register them," right? Then the next time I came back, it was a couple of days later, stopped the car again. He said, "I want to say to you, thank you for what you're doing." Now, this is a male, young father with daughters that's thanking me that we have now somewhere the children can go. And the parents, the widows, and everything, you know, we don't build something and have changes in one day or 1 year or 2 years. It's a time. And again, I've been discouraged, like most people that do work in third world countries with problems. And I said to this woman with the stabilization force of ISAF, "What am I to do? I'm getting so mad because they don't do things as soon as they should. You know, Americans want to do it all yesterday and get it." And she said, "You've got to remember, this country is traumatized. The women are traumatized." And she said, "It doesn't happen the same way, Anna. You've just got to be patient." And we tend to forget it because we're always in a hurry to get it done and move on. And that isn't the way it works. How do you wipe off 30 years of this and children? And you know what the young people say? "Tell me what my country used to be like."
Used to be when you were there in the 70s,
yes,
you mean?
Yes, they want to know what their country was like. Because a lot of the traditions, the houses, the big new houses being built are being imitations of houses in Dubai and Pakistan, not the traditional older Afghan homes that I saw. Technology plays a big part, but there's a lot of people that can't even afford food for a day, less than a dollar a day. So that street working child is making less than a dollar a day when he's helping his family. And when I was talking to Pat the other day, and we're talking about
Pat
Sunday.
Karzai.
Yeah, Pat, sorry. Talking about Sunday's presentation. "So I hope you're going to do the thing with the star." And I said,
"What is that?"
All right. This is the way when you talk to people, you want them to see the personal nature, that heart to heart, not just it's a project this much money. And when I talk to kids, I usually end up by saying, "Oh, I have something for you from a child in Afghanistan at the center." And I pass out 6 or 7 envelopes on the outside as a star, and I tell them the story that I ask children that if you were sitting outside and you know how beautiful your sky is at night and all the stars, what if one fell in your lap? What's the one thing you could wish for? And then the kid opens it, reads the child's name, and says their wish. And when we did that in Wisconsin, one of the wishes was a boy wanted a bicycle. Remember, boys will have bicycles, girls won't.
Girls don't have bicycles.
Because they're not playing out in the street or anything, like the boys. Unless they're begging. And so this one girl was so impressed, an eighth grader. And then at the night we had a follow-up meeting with the parents, and they did a choral presentation as a fundraiser. A parent came up to Pat and said, "I want you to have this. My daughter came home and insisted we have to gather money." And she had given us $75 to buy a bicycle for a child in Afghanistan. So I try to make it a personal story. But the majority of the wishes deal with, "I want a house and a garden and I want food." And one of the most one wish I got, and I was talking to Shinkai later about it, I said, "Shinkai, I was so..." This 8-year-old boy, he said he wished he could go to more weddings. And I said, "What is that?" She said, "Anna, think. What do they have at weddings? Lots of food." He wants to go to the wedding to get enough food to eat. So those are the things we tend in our quick observation as outsiders society waking. But the kids and every woman, I want a house. If the one thing they want a home and a garden. Because when we were there in the 70s, what was the pastime? Yeah, there were movie houses and men and women could go to the movies. But every Friday was picnic day out in the country. Afghans love their nature and their food and their the best melons in the world, the best pomegranates, the best grapes, you know.
And so you're now here in Baltimore too.
Right.
Raise consciousness and funds to...
An awareness that it's not all the number of lives lost or what we've given. It's who are we embacking? Who are we really want to make a difference? And I could be working here in the States and do it, and everyone says. I said, but I've been an international person, so I chose to go to a place that has the fondest memories. In Arizona, where I could live, I could be helping at an Indian reservation or a food bank or whatever. I just happen to choose a place there. And it's been most rewarding. I've got a grandson out of it, got lots of new friends. And if you see me Sunday, you'll be seeing the blouse that still now fits me from the 70s and the stole made by one of the widows at the center. And the widows, it's so interesting. They will give you stuff to thank you. They who have so little. So one day, this one wonderful widow says to me, here, this is for you. And I say, what is it? And it was the coal for your eyes with a little mirror. And it was in a little package case. And I said, oh, and of course, being a teacher, you also know how to be a bit of an actor or actress. I said, oh, well, put it on. Well, the women loved it because she's up there putting the coal on my eyes and making my eyes. And they're all going, oh, that's great. And I talked to her later, and I said, well, that was wonderful. She said, oh, that was my grandmother's.
Wow.
It's probably the last thing she might have from her grandmother, and she gave it to me. And that's that hospitality.
Folks, if you want to hear more about these stories and also to learn about the Afghan Women's Educational Center, an amazing institution, part of its soul lies here in Baltimore in terms of support that we have done here with Pat and Kayum Karzai. It'll be this Sunday at St. Mark's Church, 1900 St. Paul Street, here in Baltimore, Maryland, Sunday, August 7th at 2 p.m. And there's free parking available in the St. Mark's parking lot at St. Paul and 20th. And you can call 410-752-5804, 410-752-5804 for information. Meet Ann Hacker and all the others who are involved here with Afghanistan and our community and to learn more about the Afghan Women's Education Center. It's an important thing to support. And Anna Hacker, it's been great to have you in the studio. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you. It's I can say the Baltimore hospitality matches the Afghan hospitality.
That's good to know. Thank you. And you've been listening to The Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Thanks so much. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of King Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.